Hi everyone, so another episode where I'm a little bit delayed and I'm so sorry for posting episodes which were recorded a while ago. But this episode today is amazing for everyone who's like in the field of apps, who's interested in conversion optimization, retention optimization, onboardings, etc. I am talking to the co-founder of Cool Story. His name is Igor, one of the product managers I'm talking to on a regular basis. /founders I'm talking to on a regular basis. I think he's a really talented guy, has a lot of knowledge in the field of subscriptions. And I would say, let's just start in. And you're the founder of Cool Story. Tell me what Cool Story is.
Sure. Cool Story is a startup that I just started building last year. I've discovered in my career in product management that there is like an amazing problem to solve, a very painful one for product managers of adoption of features and activation in general in any both B2C and B2B products. And what Cool Story does is trying to solve this problem with a more simple and a more human way of interacting between the company and the user. And we do it with short videos that are akin to Instagram stories, hence the Cool Story name.
If I have an app, how do I implement your solution?
Sure. We just give you like a tiny piece of JS code that you put into your app, and in any place where you put it, you will see those stories. So it's very similar to how you would implement something like Google Analytics or any other tool.
Cool. And does it mean like also like if a setup is done from a developer, probably, but also like a non-technical person can work with a content management system and plan things and stuff?
Yes. That's the biggest idea. The biggest problem that we're solving is not necessarily the technical problem of just implementing it, but the content management side. We're making it very, very easy for product managers, for product marketers to manage the content in any way they prefer without talking to a developer since they integrated it once.
And the main goal is user activation, user engagement.
The probably like our biggest sell right now is onboarding. Like, I struggle with onboarding all the time. And if we can improve the onboarding by even like, I don't know, the activation metric by, I don't know, like 5%, they would be absolutely happy. And that's what we're doing right now.
Ah, cool. So I download a new app and it just makes sure that like I got all the features
exactly
explained by like someone talking in a video being like, oh, by the way, did you know that you actually can, I don't know, like split expenses
right.
whatever. Cool. I think that's a super nice topic if we talk a little bit more about like activation and all these kind of things. How do you define activation in the context of subscription?
Oh, that's an amazing question. I don't have like, I really like to give my own answer. And my own answer is there is a promise that a marketer gives any user whenever they interact. It could be like way before the install. It's not necessarily like seconds before sign up. It's a promise that you perceive as a customer like weeks or years before. And activation is the realization of a user that that promise was fulfilled. I don't really like, I understand the aha moment that everyone is talking about and I'm all for it. But aha moment could be for a different reason, whereas there could be no connection between a promise and an aha moment. I could be excited for something that I just discovered, whereas I really, really like to define activation as a understanding of a promise fulfilled.
Can you, you worked like as a product manager before founding your own company and several cool companies, like for example, PandaDoc. Can you give a few examples how this was in real life?
Sure. The simplest example I can give you is probably with like you have to keep in mind the marketing channel that you're using. So if we're talking, for example, about a person who is typing PandaDoc, then there's not much in terms of activation. This person will activate with like 80% of probability. So there's no problem. But if this person goes through either an organic channel or a paid marketing channel, where we promise something like simple invoice management or document workflow automation, then they come to PandaDoc, for example, and they try to find if it's actually that easy. And it's on us to give them the perception. And it's very important. You can fake activation. Companies do that quite a lot. They want the user to feel as if it's coming just right around the corner. And we want to give this perception, like, not to lose the customer. And it's so easy to lose the customer nowadays, which is the reason companies give this perception. Like in the CRM space, in my previous companies, I was pretty big in the CRM space and B2B. B2B is nothing like it was like 5 or 10 years ago, where a customer would go into your app and they would sign up and they will stay with you forever. What's happening right now is that a customer finds out that they need a problem solved, and they open like the first page of Google by their search. They open like 5 competitors or 8 competitors, and they sign up to each and every one of them. And if it bugs them just a little bit, if they don't feel this magic with a certain product, they will just immediately close it and will never come back.
Okay, I think what'd be interesting to me is what like the key metrics are which you find interesting. But the thing is, like, as maybe non-technical people are listening to the podcast, can you maybe name the key metrics you find yourself important to optimize on, but also like giving like a small explanation what a conversion rate is, or a retention or churn rate, or these kind of things?
So the first thing, and it's very, very important, and that's something that I see like junior product managers miss quite a lot, and not even junior, it happens to all of us, is we start to track some metrics immediately without looking at the first session as it is. I mean, metrics are amazing, but actually looking at what your users are doing in real time with tools like Hotjar or any other screen recording software is critically important, because you can actually sometimes see the frustration. And it's very, very important to see the frustration. Whether frustration could be like basically divided by two things and reasons people don't activate. They either are motivated and they do not understand how to do something, or they just lack motivation. And those are the two biggest sources of frustration. So the first suggestion that I would give is to really, really look at the screen recordings, because sometimes you can see like the person just being furious because they don't understand something. They just want to skip something. In terms of metrics themselves, probably like nowadays, as I said, activation has changed quite a lot. And when years ago, it was about the first, I don't know, 5 sessions. Right now, activation is all about the first session. If you don't activate your user in the first session, you basically lost this user. That's the gist of it. And the first metric that I usually look at is the length of the first session. It's not like the perfect metric by any account, but it gives you like a first overview how healthy the situation is. Because if someone had a 15-second session, that's probably not good for you, regardless of what product you're doing and how difficult your activation is. And if you go into B2B, where the first session requires quite a lot of setup, that could be the first predictor. If your first session is like 1.5 minutes, your user probably didn't set up anything, which gets me to the next point. In any activation journey, there is first a setup moment and an aha moment. So we've talked about aha moment briefly before, where it's the realization of, yes, it can do stuff that I need. Whereas the setup moment is the required input from the user to make this aha moment possible. And in B2C, sometimes the setup moment could be just very, very tiny. For example, like if we take something like TikTok or any other entertainment app, it doesn't require a setup. The only setup you have is just to launch an app for the first time and you see the any entertainment or educational content. Whereas in B2B, like you cannot get value from a CRM up until you import users there or you connect it to the other system that you're using, which requires both mental and just mental and time effort on the user's part. So, which gets me to the second metric, which is critically important, which is just the number of setups. It's basically like if we look at the activation funnel, if we zoom in into the activation funnel, we would be looking at the number of people who are trying to get to the aha moment by setting things up.
A lot of companies struggle with defining this moment. Why do you think is that?
The setup moment specifically?
The setup moment or also this aha moment? I think the setup moment probably for all companies should be clear. I assume so. But the aha moment, I think like there are a lot of discussions of what is aha moment.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. I mean, as I said in the very beginning, it really starts with the promise. And I'm sorry, I will go into the rabbit hole of product marketing right now because it's a pet peeve of mine. I gotta ask you, what was the last time you went to a big B2B company's landing page and actually understood what they do?
I think I lately haven't been to too many B2B landing pages. So
okay, I can give you a tour if you want.
Yeah. Okay, give me a tour.
Yeah. So basically, what is currently happening in B2B, and it's been like that for the last, I don't know, 3, maybe more years, is that companies are trying to become everything for everyone. If you go to like monday.com or salesforce.com or any other B2B tool that tries to be like knowledge-based management and CRM and that and this and calendar and everything. So what they do, they basically do not give you a good enough promise in the very beginning when they say that they help teams synergize to whatever 5 more bullshit words. What's happening in the end with their activation is that a user successfully signs up, a user successfully goes through the setup of whatever they're setting up, but there is no aha moment because they did not understand in the very beginning what they were signing up for. And you cannot be happy about something if you were not expecting it, essentially. And that's, I think, where a lot of discussions are happening right now around the aha moment, around the need to segment your users, to give them like a very, very segmented onboarding, which I do not necessarily agree with a lot, but that's, I think, where most of the discussion is happening right now.
Okay, interesting. And you think like it's really like essential to think a lot about, okay, what is the quota on the landing page, the big letters thing which is promised to people so that they know why we're signing in?
Absolutely, yeah. I've done, as part of my own product, I was talking a lot to Gen Z, which I'm not a part of. And I was very, very interested outside of like the scope of my personal research for my product, I was very interested in their patterns of interaction with B2B products. Because one of the trends that I see a lot recently is people are talking quite a lot about Gen Z and even younger generation as being the current users of B2C apps, which is the case. Yes, they dominate basically like in entertainment, in education, now in e-commerce because they're finally having their own money to spend. But what I saw as quite a shift that not many people understand or notice today is that these people are actually working at companies and they are buying and using B2B products as well. And for like a CRM or something like that is very, very difficult for a Gen Z person to understand, not necessarily because they don't know what a CRM is, but because they're just not used to this type of communication. So answer your question, getting back to what you asked me. The result of my research, essentially, like if I boil it down to like a 10-second thing, is that Gen Z doesn't read anything outside of like H1 on the landing page. And the quote that they gave me is essentially like, and it's a lot of people who never met each other. They basically all gave me, with different roles and titles and seniority, why do the people who wrote all this content on the landing page, who are they writing it for? I'm not going to read this. I don't have like 15 minutes to go and scroll like read all that. Essentially, that's the reason why I'm so mad, essentially, at companies having their prime real estate wasted on vague stuff.
I had this discussion before. I was always like, who's gonna read this? People don't read. In my last employment, so nowadays I'm not responsible for landing page, etc. But in my last employment, the big teaser on the website until nowadays is, are you tired of cookie banners? Our browser extension automatically responds to cookie banners based on your chosen privacy level. Do you think that's a good example or a bad one or something to improve?
If I give you, like, of course, there is always room for improvement, but if I compare it to all the ones that I gave you, it's a perfect one. It talks about the problem immediately. It's a very specific problem. And yes, the activation in the end would be me realizing that the promise was fulfilled. My personal favorite, I don't know how they perform. I haven't talked to people who actually work at those companies. It's essentially like you have a CRM or anything else, doesn't matter. And the main tagline is the best fucking CRM for audience. It does not give you a promise, a specific promise, but it gives you an emotional promise, and you're immediately invested and you're motivated, which is something we didn't touch a lot. But let me tell you this. This is so important. One of the things that I always wanted to measure but was never able to, so maybe you will have some ideas. We were only doing this qualitatively via user interviews, et cetera, is that different people have very different levels of energy that they want to invest into a process. So, for example, there's you and there's your clone who has the same job. Everything about you two is the same. And I give you like a type form of 60 questions. And different people will actually drop off at different stages. So there will be some person who will go through the 60 questions, no problem. And there will be one person who just looks at the number of questions somewhere at the top of the page and like, I'm not doing this, I'm sorry. And there will be another person who will go through like 20 and drop off. And one thing that I would really, really love somehow to measure is this level of remaining energy that the person is willing to use to progress through this barrier, essentially, that they need to.
And you would say, like, over time, like, people get exhausted and, like, the chances for someone, like, to really take action are getting lower and lower and lower. And this aha moment needs to be, like, on the first day when, like, the app is installed.
Absolutely. Not the first day. The first day was years ago. Now it's the first session. And And first session could be as short as, like, a couple minutes, once again, depending on your product. And the audience you're serving. Yeah.
What do you think is the impact of non-activated users on the long-term retention metrics?
Ooh, fantastic question. That's something. So the how I discovered activation in the very beginning of my product journey, I was talking a lot with my CEO about a metric like a one-day retention or a two-day retention, or a seven-day retention, which were abysmal. They were super low. And we couldn't understand, like, what's the reason? Why are people churning? The reason is they're not churning. They were just never activated. And I really, really, like, when I managed product managers back in the days, I really taught them to draw a very specific line between non-activated and activated users, because when a non-activated user, quote unquote, churns, there's no reason for churn. Like, you can determine if the user is activated, your next step, the obvious next step, is to figure out what is the actual reason they are churned. With non-activated users, there's just one reason. They never understood why they're here in the first place. So yeah. That's the gist of it.
you mentioned that, like, when using cool story, like, the retention is, like, really high. Can you elaborate on why this happens?
Among my users or
Customers of yours? So, like, before when we talked last time, you said something like this.
Yes, the biggest reason, it's not with 100% of customers, obviously, but it's the biggest reason is that it's the problem that is very, very popular among companies right now. As I said, the activation rates are dropping if companies don't change. There are companies that don't use Cool Story and adapt their onboarding and work on it constantly. They have dedicated growth teams. And in those growth teams, there are people responsible for activation who check the trends, check the analytics, and always try to keep the activation high. Those are usually the companies that rely a lot on paid marketing, because it's very, very painful for a CMO to hear that we've spent X millions of dollars on paid advertisement. Those users have signed up, and then they never went anywhere. And like 70% of our marketing budget is essentially wasted and passed on to the customer acquisition cost, which companies do not like to grow a lot. Those companies that do track all that are actually not my customers. But the rest of the companies that need to figure this out as soon as possible, they feel the pain. And once they use Cool Story, they actually found out that, yes, you can improve those metrics by being more direct with your customers in communication for any reason.
One blocker which I have in my head is when, like, I worked for Finanzguru, which is like a German app to organize your finances. And like, it's an amazing app, like everyone should download it. I 100% recommend, it saved me a lot of money. The thing is, we definitely have a huge onboarding, which is kind of important to have like a good user experience. But at the other side, like, you know, when talking about Gen Z, et cetera, I wonder, how can you balance the speed, but at the same time ensuring like to actually activate the users and provide them like quality? Do you think there's like a good balance?
This all boils down to experiments in my personal experience. There wasn't a single situation where I walked into a company and I said, okay, this has to be this way. We always ran an experiment and tried to figure out whether we should close the app before user passes through a very painful onboarding, or should we open it up as much as possible, even to the point of it being accessible without a sign up. You've probably seen some of the cases like this where you can basically go and start using an app by just clicking a button either on web or on mobile. And as you start inputting any useful like personal information, it actually prompts you to sign up at some point to save all the results that you got. And it all boils down to experimentation of how your users are behaving, because for example, in one of the apps that I've built, which was a social network, and it was like a very, very specific social network for a sub niche. It was very important for them to see first what's in there and then sign up and then go through all this painful process. Whereas in B2B, it's very often that it doesn't make sense to open up and show what is inside if the customer has not inputted anything and cannot get any value out of it. So it all boils down to just trying it out a lot. So I would really, really suggest you to run an experiment of like either a zero onboarding and try to see how users will behave. It's a very useful experiment to run.
I mean, we do a lot of experimentation, because obviously like web is just useful if you connect your bank account and like and have all the transactions. Like, if not, like, it's a waste of time. Like, no one like has the discipline to manually add expenses. We all know that. And then like it's also not possible to like see, okay, if that's a long-term contract which you maybe could cancel and all these kind of things.
Yeah, the relevant case I have, it's not exactly the same as Binance Group, but it's still a fintech app where in the very beginning, you have to go through KYC. And what they did is that they just removed the KYC. They'll let the user go into the app, see what's going to happen there. And then when the user wants to like take a loan or deposit cash or whatever they're doing there, only then it prompts them to go through KYC. And KYC in fintech is essentially like the biggest drop-off in the onboarding journey and the activation journey. And they essentially hacked their activation this way, and it worked. I assume that Finance Guru is a bit easier because connecting a bank is not as difficult as going through like a KYC with your photos and your passport and everything. Yeah.
But still, it's a big barrier for people because they are like, okay, I want to get my finances organized. And then it's like this big onboarding, but it's needed to be, I don't know, like to be useful. And obviously, if you want a useful app, it's just helping people.
Yeah. What really helped in my experience with those barriers that you cannot avoid is to, especially in B2C, is just to motivate the user on an emotional level. It's very important to connect with the user on an emotional level. And what usually works is just to show them what awaits them after that. So it one of my customers is using stories in a very different way than I imagined in B2C. They're using it for upsells. And what they do is it's a mobile app. It's like a entertainment mobile app. And what they do is instead of like a generic upsell that says like upgrade to a premium plan to get this, this, and that for $3.99 per month, what they do is they show testimonials of people who are on the premium plan. So you can like click and you can see a video of a person saying like how excited they are to be on this premium plan. So what you can do, you can probably like try to show somehow, not necessarily with cool story in any way, you can like what awaits them after the bank is connected. I know it's not that exciting to connect a bank, but here's what's there.
Yeah. And I think especially if it's about finances, people have trust issues, and like for sure they should have like there's a lot of crap outside as well. And I think it's the good thing to be like super data privacy concern, especially if it's important data. And I mean, like the Germans are a little more strict with these kind of things, but I think it's a really good thing. What are your feelings on like free trials before people really do upfront payments before they see that?
Really depends on the industry. Sometimes it just doesn't work because of the customer acquisition cost. The rule of thumb is essentially, like if you are in the very, very high competitive industry, for example, like dating or I don't know, something, yeah, around that. Let's just get dating as an example. Or gambling is actually a really, really like good example. They're very similar in their funnel. So what's expected in the funnel from the business side is that you spend a ton of money on acquisition. And you want to recuperate this money as soon as possible to be reinvested in further acquisition. You cannot wait for the customer to pay you later because your opponents, your competitors, will just straight up outbid you on the paid marketplace. And in those situations, free trials just don't work. Just period. Even though a lot of companies have tried. On the other hand, free trial is an amazing way to both help with activation, as we just talked, and to just disrupt the market if your competition doesn't do it, and if it's possible, it's a fantastic way to build PLG straight into your flow, where the customer would. We obviously need a lot of traffic, and we need a lot of free users to convert into paid users. But yeah, free trial really, really works as opposed to premium, for example. I prefer, I think, well, once again, depending on the situation, but free trial, time limited, free trial really helps with activation because it does two things. One, it lets you experience the aha moment uninterrupted, unrestricted by any limitations of a freemium. And second, which is less talked about, it makes user invest into setting up more. And it basically makes it more likely for them to convert into paid because they have already invested, they already understand stuff, as opposed to like freemium where you activate a freemium with one button, you can do much. Well, once again, it really depends on the freemium, but as a rule of thumb, I prefer free trial for that reason.
If you say like it's good if it's time limited, what time frame do we talk about? I think typically it's like for B2B environment, maybe a month, and B2C maybe a week, I guess. Not 100% sure about this, but that's what I've seen a lot. How do you think about these time frames?
Yeah, I think in B2C, you're quite on point that a week is usually everything that's needed to figure stuff out. In B2B, the most popular is 14 days. And the reasons are not as obvious. It's not simply just wanting to get the money earlier. That's not the case. A shorter trial period motivates the user to act right now, which is very, very important in the activation journey. One of the things that is quite often happening with people, one of the reasons the first session matters so much is because I can be motivated, I can understand what is happening, but maybe I got something in the mail, like a courier is waiting right outside my door, and I close the tab. And when I come back 1 minute later, it's out of my memory. I forgot what I was doing, et cetera, et cetera. And the main reason companies don't do like a month or 2 month trial is not because they want the customer earlier. It's because it's a relaxed time frame where the customer is essentially like, I'll figure this out later. I'll set this up later. And what is actually happening, they never do. They have some priorities that's essentially it.
How do you think about like making it even shorter? I mean, like in the B2C context, probably people can understand better and identify more with like the situation, like installing an app and like just having 1 day. Do you think like there are cases where this would make sense? So just giving a sneak peek.
Yes, it definitely does. Once again, it really depends on the situation, because sometimes, like in my previous company, there's no way for a customer to get, we had quite a lengthy trial. We had, I think default was 30 days, and then we extended it for some customers as well, completely free of charge. And the reason we did that is because our actual aha moment of getting leads was quite delayed, and the mean average was like 40 days or something like that, of customers realizing and getting their first results, which actually like seals the deal for us. So sometimes those restrictions apply. Like I can give you like another example, any collaborative tool where you can set things up in the first session, obviously, but you will get an actual aha moment when your coworkers, collaborators join and you do actually something together. And then you understand like, okay, that's something I need. And there are even tools in B2B that can enjoy like a 3 to 1 day trial period. If it's a tool, I can give you like an example. I don't remember the name. I used it a couple of years ago. It was a tool that helps reorganize your calendar. Like if you're a manager, you have like tons of meetings running at the same time, you forget to eat, you forget to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. So what it helps you do, it helps you to reorganize your calendar into better blocks. It relies only that its setup moment is you connecting Google Calendar, which is like one click, and its aha moment is when it does the reorganization the first time. So the trial period could easily be 1 day.
If you talk about calendars, do you think for Calendly, like the aha moment is when you get the first like appointment set it into your calendar without touching anything, without communication?
Yes, I do think so. They are trying their best to make you believe that it's not as far as you think. There are ways that companies that rely on any external interaction for their aha moment. Companies try to make you feel as if you've accomplished something even before with simple things like gamification, with fake activation. They can sometimes do even programmed interactions where they will basically, like a bot will book a Calendly meeting with you saying like, hi, this is Calendly. This is how you book a meeting. This is how someone will book a meeting. But yeah, it could be a problem for companies like Calendly if they don't do that and they expect you to put a Calendly link and yeah, your first booking would be in 2 months. Yeah, it's painful for them.
Yeah, interesting. I definitely will in the next weeks always look out for aha moments because I think it's an interesting concept and I think there's something on it. Like all the tools I really like, I think I remember kind of aha moment. Like for example, Zencastr we're using right now. Like the aha moment for me was like I recorded the first episode and I was like, oh shit, that's cool. Like it's automatically in Google Drive, everything stuff by itself. nice job. Do you think there are some counterintuitive strategies that worked for you well to maximize the customer lifetime value?
Yes, there was one. I mean, there are dark patterns. If we're talking about customer lifetime value, that work for everyone, to be honest. And it's both in B2B and B2C. It's more prevalent, obviously, in B2C because that's where you can like manipulate people. The most basic one is to restrict cancellation. That's something that like companies that rely on the returning their customer acquisition costs do a lot. Like for example, they will give you like the best promotion when you try to cancel. They will make you call even in B2C. I've seen that they will make you call like a customer service representative or something like that to cancel. Basically what Netflix does in the US, basically what like cable companies do in the US. And yeah, it's very, very like illegal in the EU, but wherever it's possible, they do that. And yeah, B2B companies essentially are jumping on the bandwagon and it proves to be the biggest like way companies prevent churn and therefore increase customer lifetime value. But the actual answer, like the proper answer of what to do is to figure out what your customers need. Just to do your job. That's essentially it. Yeah. But you asked me about some unusual ways. So I'm giving you those.
I checked like in a few apps, like how it's looking. Like it's insane. Like if you, for example, like in Tinder, you have to scroll completely down. Then it's like, do you want to delete? Do you want to pause instead of deletion? And then you're like, no, I want to delete. And then it's like, oh, we have 6 different cases. So I want to start new. I don't like Tinder. Okay. And then like it again says like, okay, please confirm. And like, super crazy.
And you have to understand that we are very much currently protected, you and me, by EU regulations, which make it very easy for us. If you were to cancel your Tinder or delete your Tinder profile in the US, outside of California, you would be in for a ride. Yeah, because they don't want that at all.
It's just not possible.
Another shady, like I started with shady things, so I'm talking about shady things today. Another shady things those companies do is I'm talking about B2C companies. Like most of the shady things are done by B2C companies because they rely on customer acquisition costs more. What they do is they play with short trials. And the trial is like 3 days. And what they say is essentially like, sign up for a trial that is going to cost you nothing. And then subscribe for a week for $1. What they don't tell you is that after a week of $1 subscription, you will be automatically upgraded to a yearly plan that's like $100.
And you signed the contract.
And they do that with like Apple and Google Pay. So it's very, very easy for you to go and download the app on the App Store or Google Play. And they do that in the onboarding when you are most excited. And their business model completely relies on people just not canceling this trial and not canceling it during the like the 7-day window. And yeah, they basically like make people forget that they have a subscription, which yeah, gives birth to a whole new category of like subscription management software in B2C. That helps people unsubscribe from things they never subscribed to.
I mean, it's fascinating on one way, but it's also giving me weird feelings. I don't know. Like,
it's insane for me. Like personally, I know a lot about this. And one of the main reasons I know a lot about this is because how immoral it is and how it makes me feel. Like I would never work at a company that does any of those things. So whenever I interviewed anywhere, that was like one of my questions. Do you rely on any of these things? How can I unsubscribe from your product? Then I go, I activate a trial and I try to unsubscribe. If I can do that without talking to anyone, that's the company I want to work for.
By the way, that's a good platform to get make advertisement for Finance Guru. You can cancel all the contracts within Finance Guru via fax. So it's like it has to be received by the companies. Okay, any final thoughts, key takeaways for our audience? So if you would maybe have a junior like product manager in front of you, what would be like the key things you would like focus on?
The first thing is understand your audience, not necessarily like their demographics, what they had for breakfast or any of this stuff, but their biggest motivation. Why have they just downloaded your app? Why have they signed up for your CRM? And then give them that as soon as possible. It's very easy to say. It's very hard to implement. And when I was mentoring my team members, I was basically refocusing them day after day on this simple idea, which is really, as I said, easy to say, very, very hard to actually do, because the audience is not like, not all of them are the same. They come for different reasons. So you have to segment, you have to understand. That's probably my biggest takeaway for the audience. That's something that I would stand by every day.
I like this. I think like, of course, there are like ways where you maybe can make like some performance increases, but in the end, like people are not stupid. People will find the cancellation button if they really search for it. So just build something useful.
Yeah, it's really that obvious. Yeah, and I think our colleagues back in the US should probably implement some laws as well, which will help the industry in general, because
not sure if this will come now, but we'll see. Thank you so much, Igor. To our listeners, if you like the episode, please subscribe, give it like 5 stars or something, and of course head over to Cool Story if you're interested in stories in your product, because I think activation is a cool thing and I really like the nerd talks about product management. So thank you again, Igor.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like the podcast, give it a like, give it 5 stars, write it a review, share it with friends. You know, whatever you want to do, like feel free to support me. I definitely really like Igor, and I enjoy talking to him on a regular basis. By the way, I recommend to everyone doing the coffee chats with people you like and where you see like a good flow, like in a conversation, and especially if you do this over years, that's super nice, because you see like the people progress, but you also see yourself progressing, and like you can support each other. I don't know, like it's a cool thing. Thank you so much, Igor, for being there. Sorry everyone for posting delayed episodes, and have a wonderful day.